The following is rated TV-MALSV. It contains strong language, violence, and nudity. It is intended only for mature audiences. Viewer discretion advised.
His name strikes fear in his enemies.
It's open season on all Night Stalkers.
Half human.
All our strengths.
Half immortal.
None of our weaknesses.
He is the ultimate weapon in the war against evil.
Tonight, the age of man comes to an end.
I don't see it that way.
Wesley Snipes, Stephen Dorff, Blade. Rated R.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm Lulu Shin. With me is
Mr. Fix-It
and
Diablo Frank.
And today we're going to talk about Blade. Death, 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 kill.
Boots, 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 boots.
Chris Christopherson in this movie, fucking right?
Yep.
Yes.
Chris Christopherson. Who would have thought the comedy stylings of Chris Christopherson and Wesley Snipes?
The rubber duck rides again.
Who would have thought? And then who's the guy from the e-cig commercial?
E-cig commercial?
I'm Stephen Dorff. I've been a smoker for 20 years.
The main villain in this movie.
He's the guy that's always a generic Nazi slash...
Who's the guy? Frank, who's the guy?
Stephen Dorff.
Stephen Dorff!
Oh, I thought you meant the other guy, the older guy.
No, Stephen Dorff.
The vampire.
Because he did Blade and then nothing for 15 years.
What do you mean the older guy? Stephen Dorff is the vampire.
No, there's the other vampire. Remember...
Are you talking about Donald Logue from... what is it? Not My So-Called Life. What's that sitcom from 26?
No. That's he comes
he's
out of Gotham. Yeah. No.
Yeah. He plays Bullock in Gotham. Yeah.
No. I'm talking about when they go to the elders and the vampire tells them,
"Is he the
Frost,
underworld?
You're
guy?
Only a half breed. You're not one of us."
The underworld.
That guy.
Guy?
He's in like.
I'd have
every...
to watch the fucking movie. I haven't seen this movie.
Okay.
In
we'll
ages.
Watch the movie. I'll point him out in a moment. Every time I see him, he's in this movie called Iron Sky, I believe, where it's like the Nazis were on the moon.
Is he the dude that played the devil in Hellblazer?
What kind of a sick. Fucky fuck ritual is that?
I'm pretty... No.
John Constantine, I mean? Constantine?
No. That's the guy from Fargo. No. You'll see. I'll point him out. Okay. I'll point him out. When you see him, he's one of those character actors where I see him and I'm like, oh, I know he's the villain.
Is it the dude from Shaun of the Dead? The guy
no.
who played the stepdad?
My festering turd of a record.
No, that's not him either.
I don't know.
No,
we'll this have guy, to watch it.
Yeah. It's the vampire
oh,
they
Udo,
set on fire. Remember, they remove his
Udo
teeth.
Kier?
Udo Kier.
There
okay.
you go. Udo
who,
Kier.
Who, if I recall correctly, played Dracula in Andy Warhol's Dracula.
The blood of this whore is killing me.
Okay, but he's one of those character actors where every time I see him, I know he's the villain and he's either going to die or something bad's going to happen to him.
But he's German.
Is he?
So it's a given that he was going to be the villain. He's Udo Kier.
He's fucking Udo Kier. He's not... I think he's from,
he could be
from
Brazil.
Atlanta. I think he's from Atlanta, actually.
He could be from Brazil.
Argentina, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh,
you guys want to talk about conspiracies?
Here we go.
Hi, I'm Diablo Frank, and you're listening to InfoWars. The Nazis settled in Argentina back in 1947. If you think Hitler killed himself, you're out of your damn mind. He's sitting down there with the lizard people and the pornographers. It's a conspiracy from the Nazi pedophilia that's intruded into Hollywood that's suppressing the Martian Manhunter out of these comic books. You tell me why they picked Commander Blanks as a valid villain to be in any of these. It's a left-wing conspiracy.
Oh, sorry.
These Skittles are killing me.
We were talking about Udo. You guys want to talk about Udo?
Well, that I want to point out that Chris Christopherson managed to get into two of the dark Marvel franchises that are not Marvel Studios, because he was also in Ghost Rider.
For real, he was?
Yeah, he's Gravedigger in Ghost Money? Or is
no,
it Sam
that's
Elliott?
Your dude!
Sam Elliott.
Yeah,
that's right.
Oh
Sam
my
Elliott.
God.
Hey, I love Chris Christopherson in Universal Hulk. Fantastic performance.
My God.
That's
Frank.
Your dude!
Dude abide.
You literally pattern your life after this man. And you're like, oh yeah, he's in this movie. No, he's not.
I forgot. No, well, I love Chris Christopherson too.
So you say
I like
are you
the old
they're very
white
similar?
Dudes.
They're very similar.
They actually have taken some fairly similar roles over the years. Yeah.
Okay. Old
and
white
a tall, grizzled white man.
Well, isn't Sam Elliott going to be in the new A Star Is Born?
And what
with Lady Gaga and Rocket Raccoon?
Wait, what? Whoa! Lady Gaga and Racket Raccoon?
What? Yeah, are in the new A Star Is Born.
Oh,
Bradley Cooper.
Oh, Bradley Cooper. And
oh my God.
Okay,
Frank,
now I know what you're talking about.
Dude.
Now I know what you're talking about.
Well, anyway, Chris Christopherson was in the A Star Is Born with Barbara Streisand, so there's some overlap there. Maybe. Unless I'm wrong.
Chris Christopherson.
About-
you're probably Highwayman. Highwayman.
Highwayman, yes.
Chris Christopherson. Take, what does Sam Elliott sing? Did he sing with Johnny Cash? Fuck no. Sam Elliott.
But he has the you, if you have a mustache off but against Tom Selleck, he wins. So.
No.
That's
Tom
Selleck does not.
Listen, this is the mustache ranking. You ready for this mustache ranking? Tom Selleck. Alex Trebek getting hit by a car. Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott's number one, baby.
No way.
Wade Garrett.
Oh, wait, okay, no way,
no.
Dude.
No. I will give you this. Cheech Marin. Tom Selleck.
Cheech don't even rock a mustache anymore.
Dude, if you watch Up in Smoke.
Look, he had a solid mustache.
He got that nice stash, man. Got a lot of link to it.
He was really good in its prime, but its prime was a long time
ago. Yeah, true.
You got to look at longevity.
I don't think Selleck's rocking it now, is he?
He shaved.
No, I think it looks very dyed last time I saw it.
Well, he's retiring too.
Oh, okay.
That's what I hear. So, well, we're off topic.
No, we're talking about Chris Christopherson.
Yeah.
He's in the movie.
Still.
No, really not.
Highwayman. Chris Christopherson.
Not that big on the
Wait, which part of the song does he sing?
Wasn't he the dam builder?
Yeah. I was a dam builder.
Okay, yeah. Who's the one that does the spaceship? Because I always thought that was just
Cash. Johnny Cash.
That was Johnny.
That's an odd choice. Yeah. Johnny Cash, you're not as playing
talking
the
about
spaceship.
Space, so, yeah.
That's like
I fly as no, it was I fly a starship. Across the universe, something, something.
Divide.
And when I reach the other side,
I'll rest my weary spirit if I can. Perhaps I will become a highwayman again. Yeah. Or I may become a single drop of rain. But I will remain. And I'll be back again and again.
Are you like
Come on,
this
except when he says again and again, they start to synthesize it. And he goes, wow. They do it. It's freaking weird. Yeah, his verse
is so weird.
I never
saw Frank karaoke before. It was amazing.
Well, you're supposed to join the harmony.
We're the fucking highwaymen of podcast.
Oh, no, my bad.
Me and him are the highwaymen. You are the fucking audience, apparently.
I'm Pancho.
You helped me build the dam.
No, he's the guy who got buried at the bottom of the dam.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody heard his
dying word. Yeah, that reminds me of the Frank Sinatra concept album where he's talking about going into outer space.
Jupiter makes with the rain. Saturn makes with the crops. A nicer trade was never made and hopefully never stops.
Well, where he's talking about going from planet to planet and shit, just completely not in line with the image.
Stop spreading the news.
Yeah, Chris Christopherson should have been the spaceman. It's obvious. I don't know what the hell they were thinking there.
Chris Christopherson should have been the spaceman.
There's a t-shirt in that, I think.
Chris Christopherson should have been. Oh my God. He should have flown the starship. Damn it.
But then we're
right, now we're off topic.
Now we're way off topic.
You better wake up. The world you live in is just a sugar-coated topple. There is another world beneath it. The real world.
For thousands of years, they have existed among us.
You keep your eyes open. They're everywhere. Chances are you've seen them yourself and didn't know it.
A secret nation.
Our livelihood depends on our ability to blend in.
With a lust for power.
We should be ruling the humans. These people are our food.
They've got their claws into everything. Politics, finance, real estate.
There's a war going on out there. He makes the weapons. I use them.
Now, one will lead them to conquer mankind.
Tonight, the age of man comes to an end.
We're gonna be gods.
And one will try to stop him dead.
There are worse things out tonight than vampires.
Like what?
Like me.
Half human.
Blade's mother was attacked by a vampire while she was pregnant.
Half immortal.
You got the best of both worlds. All our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
He is their greatest fear and our only hope.
Soap and season all vampires.
Snipes.
Steven Dorff.
You're one of them, aren't you?
No, I'm something else. Blade.
Past experience with the character Blade, specifically in the comic books?
Absolutely nothing. I don't think of anything.
Midnight Suns.
Was that your introduction to the characters during Midnight Suns?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, probably that's where I recognized him from, but I don't think I ever
read it. I never read a Blade comic book up to that point.
And you didn't read Tomb of Dracula at all? No, that's right. We had this conversation because, peek behind the curtain, one of the things that definitely hurt my enthusiasm for the podcast, The Marvel Superheroes, is doing shit like I read 3 years worth of Howard the Duck comics in preparation for doing a follow-up comic book related Howard the Duck episode that never happened. And I also read about the first 15 issues of Tomb of Dracula in preparation for both a coverage of the Japanese illegal adaptation of Tomb of Dracula, which we never watched, and also because it was an adaptation of the entire 71 issue series, I'd have had to read 71 issues to know what was and wasn't in the movie, but also in preparation for Blade episode. In the earlier days of the show, when I was trying to figure out what the show was going to be, one of the things I was going to try to do is
do we still know what the fuck this show is?
I
like that we were like freeform jazz.
We're still pretty
before
I gave up. Yeah, one of the plans was initially it was going to be I was going to try to do a chronological look at Marvel, which is why we did like a Kazar episode, which was an all-time low.
I gotta go back and listen to it. I bet it's aged well.
I doubt very seriously that's aged well. It's mostly a solo show and those are never good. But also the idea was to maybe have a quasi-team where we'd have a select number of characters that we would follow through their careers. And to some degree, we've done that with Hellcat and Tigra, but not to a great degree. And so I thought, well, we get Blade in there too, and that never fucking happened. But we're now coming up on the 20th anniversary of the Blade movie, so it's time to go ahead and take a look at Blade. But for me, I bought all of my back issues at flea markets and stuff when I was a kid, because they didn't have no comic shops when I was in my early days of collecting comics. And Tomb of Dracula's happened to be fairly cheap. The series had been canceled for a few years. It wasn't superhero shit. Gene Colan wasn't in favor. Gene Colan was a guy you could find fairly often in the cheapy bins back in those days, because there was a real low regard for most of the classic Marvel artists. Jack Kirby was not a desirable artist in those days. Steve Ditko was not a desirable artist in those days, and certainly not Gene Colan. So I actually got a fairly decent chunk of Tomb of Dracula. I wasn't like a hardcore collector, but out of 71 issues, I probably had like a dozen or so that I managed to pull out of cheapy bins. So out of mostly late era, which was not the best stuff, Dracula had like an angel baby and he fought the Silver Surfer at one point. It got kind of weird there toward the end.
It's fucking weird.
Really weird.
Dracula fighting Silver Surfer is like Johnny Cash going into space.
But they'd already done a really good two-parter because Gene Colan drew both books between Doctor Strange and Dracula. So I could
works
see where
it,
they kind of went.
Works a little better.
Works a lot works better. Yeah, that's actually a classic. We ought to read that story sometime. The problem though is, again, one of the characters I would have liked to have followed was Doctor Strange, and one of our regular listeners, Grant Richter, has started Into the Weird, and one of the main characters they're covering on that show is Doctor Strange. So it's one of those deals where it's like, well, if somebody's already covering Doctor Strange,
but they won't cover like we cover it.
Probably for the better. Yeah,
a lot less talking about dicks.
I've not heard them mention the penis one time on the show so far. So if you're not into the peen the way we apparently are, based on our meme, then yeah, you probably want to listen to Into the Weird instead.
Welcome to Into the Weird, the podcast where we discuss the madness of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I am Grant Richter, and with me is the Lord of Darkness himself, host of the Long Box of Darkness podcast, Mr. Herman Lowe.
Hi there, Grant. Nice to be here, man. As alluded by our title, Into the Weird, we're discussing the weirdness of Marvel during the late 60s and 70s and early 80s. Marvel was already weird with its main titles, like the Avengers, like Thor, but they got even weirder when it got to the 70s and the comic code relaxed, and that's the stuff we'll be focusing on.
Our listeners know we're not going to be touching too much on the standard Marvel superheroes. We're not going to be going too much into Spider-Man or the Avengers or the Fantastic Four. We're going to be going into the Marvel writers doing a lot of drug stuff,
which is
the best Marvel stuff.
Well, for the two of us, definitely. Bye for me.
Stay weird.
Stay weird, weirdos.
So I had some familiarity with Blade from Tomb of Dracula, and not having reread the issues recently, just going from memory and reconciling that with things I've learned in the years since reading that, Blade was fucking Shaft. Somebody saw Shaft, and then they saw Blackula, and they put the two of them together, and so that's basically what you've got. It's like, what if Shaft fought Blackula? That's how I think how you end up with Blade, because he's basically a blaxploitation character. He's a badass. He runs around like a safari jacket with goggles. Not a great look, by the way. I always thought he was cool relative to Tomb of Dracula, because everybody in Tomb of Dracula Dracula was just like regular dudes. So he was the one fantastic character who was a kick-ass martial artist and, you know, like a kind of like a second story man because he was always like jumping through windows and shit. So he's like the one action character amongst a bunch of people that were basically like straight, like your typical horror movie kind of guys, your Van Helsing wannabes and shit. So I liked him for that reason, but I couldn't say that I was that big of a fan. And then they did Midnight Suns, of course, and he was the badass 90s anti-hero type character amongst those various people, probably diminished somewhat by the fact that Ghost Rider and all those type of Morbius were actually super-powered people, so they could do cooler shit than just jump through windows with wooden sticks and stab you. But then when this movie got big, they tried to do a comic book, and I think they wanted to get as big of a name as they could, so they got Bart Sears. And you know, I was pretty excited about Blade. I ordered a fair number of copies hoping to push that book in my comic shop back in the day, and then the fucking book was unreadable. It looked okay, but from panel to panel, you didn't know what the fuck was going on. Bart Sears was so concerned about doing design stuff with his pages, probably thinking about reselling those pages on eBay, you know, in the early days of eBay, rather than thinking about actually telling a story. It was incomprehensible and fucking pretentious as fuck. And basically, by trying to go for the hot artist and keeping that image mentality that Marvel was still hewing to in the late 90s, once they got desperate enough, when they got the Image guys back to do Heroes Reborn, and not that long afterwards, they get Marvel Knights going, and that was, again, going to guys like Joe Quesada and saying, hey, can you know, give us some of that image action? They tried to do that with Bart Sears and his Ominous Press boys, and it was just a fucking horror show. So this was Blade's chance to become the next big black character in comics, in Marvel comics. Got the hard artist, didn't get a writer, shit the bed, and Blade never recovered from it as a comic book character, because they've tried repeatedly to do stuff with Blade in the comics, but it's never really had a lot of traction. They've had some decent length runs, maybe a couple of years, but given that Blade the movie was what broke the Marvel curse, there had never been a good Marvel movie, unless you're like us and like Howard the Duck, there had never been a good Marvel movie before Blade, and certainly no real successes. And it was the first time Marvel actually had a movie that people liked and wanted to make sequels to, and finally gave them some traction in Hollywood. Because for the longest time, Hollywood thought that superheroes movies were, and comic book movies were, Superman and Batman. And then everybody else was just somebody they could maybe make a cheapy movie off. And part of it, too, is probably just that Marvel was incompetent at shopping this stuff to Hollywood. Jim Shooter's told a lot of stories about what a mess they made of that. The rights to Spider-Man getting completely fucked up probably hurt them as well.
I'm just curious, why Blade?
Yeah.
Why Blade? What of every character that they could have made this one movie out of? Why Blade? Was Wesley Snipes a fan? Was it?
I think he was, wasn't he?
I don't know. Do you have any of the extra material and stuff, or do you just? We need to check to see if they have any extra material. We'll do a little research too. I guess we'll start the movie and then we'll maybe fill in some stuff along the way.
Well, I want to talk about where we were and what year was this again?
This would have been 98. Since it's the 20th anniversary.
The 20th anniversary. Because math. what was going on in 2008, guys?
No,
1998. What were contemporaries to this in 98? What were the big movies in 1998?
Well, I mean, see, that you're really walking into this one then. I remember, if I remember correctly, it was you, your brother, Ween, and the son of the woman I was running my shop with. Y'all all went to see this movie. I didn't go. Y'all loved it to fucking pieces. Your brother especially was just like hard selling this movie, but all the whole group of y'all, I think the other the son was also really big on it. And so y'all hard sold what an incredible movie Blade was, and you're like, we'll see it again if you just go see it with us. So we went to, was it a dollar show back then, or was it still a full price theater?
I saw this with you.
You did not see this with us.
No.
We watch it, and I was pretty disappointed with the movie. I thought it was okay, but after you guys had hard sold it so much, I was sort of like, whatever, it was all right. And then The Matrix came out, and The Matrix blew my mind the way that Blade appeared to blow you guys' mind. So that was the contemporary to Blade. This came out, and then I think it might have been either later that year or the following year. I think it was the following year Matrix came out. It was like, this is what you guys were telling me Blade was.
Would you guys like to hear the top 10 grossing films in 1998.
Go for it.
Number one, Armageddon, starring Bruce Willis.
I remember seeing that one in the theater.
Which, you know another movie on this list if Armageddon came out.
Yeah. Well, so, and I saw that one with my father, my brother, and my sister, and we all enjoyed it. It was a good flick.
Terrible movie. If you're watching it, it's worst.
It's a lot of fun, though.
It's freaking horrible. And then Saving Private Ryan, number two, Godzilla. I know a lot of infamous movies on this list.
Yeah, that's terrible.
A Bug's Life. Oh, no. After Godzilla, There's Something About Mary. All-time comedy classic.
Yeah. I need to watch that again because it's been a long time, yep. So I'm pretty sure I've forgotten most of the...
Oh, horribly offensive. That movie could not come out in 2018.
Frank and Beans Alone.
Oh, no way, dude. No way.
Frank and Beans! Make some veins!
A Bug's Life, Deep Impact, which is the sister movie to Armageddon.
It's surprising, usually when you have those sister
Taleone.
Those doppelganger movies. I've never seen Deep Impact, by the way. But
I think it's better.
I saw
a lot
ending.
Of people do.
I've never seen the whole movie. I've seen the ending only.
A lot of people say that because it was much more into what might really happen and how people would really act, where Armageddon was just a total fantasy.
It's a dumb space movie.
It's got space dementia.
But it's rare that you have those two doppelganger movies and they both make it into the top films. Is that the only time that's happened?
Who knows?
I'm sure.
Mulan, Dr. Doolittle.
Hey, they made like four of those. Yeah. So.
Shakespeare in Love, and rounding the top 10, Lethal Weapon 4.
Really?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
That's another one that must have gotten there on Goodwill and nobody had any desire to make a fifth one. So.
Crazy. And then let's see the list of notable films.
So that must be like one of those Planet of the Apes deals where it made enough money, but they all were still like, no, this was a terrible mistake.
I think they just did that one to close out the franchise. If you watch it, I watched it.
You feel like that was intended to be the end of
it? Yeah, that was kind of just a closer.
Okay, you guys want to hear a few more? Okay, we got a Adam's Family Reunion, American History X. Yeah, that's it. That's as far as we got to go. But yeah, so those were some movies. That's where Mirica was. That's where cinema was in 1998. We had fucking Armageddon.
We already had Michael Bay, so we were in still the modern era. I think we're still in the Michael Bay era.
Armageddon is very much Transformers.
I've seen chunks of the second one of that, and that's it. So do we want to tell the Hollywood story right quick? It's not much of a story.
No, it's not much of a story. We talked about it on the podcast before. So we went to go see at this theater called Hollywood that is terrible. I think, is it a 99 cent? Is it a dollar?
No, no, it's a full.
Or did they redo it? Now it's all like nice and.
Yeah, exactly. They've got the recliners and shit nowadays.
Okay, well, back in our day, back in old 1998, bit of a rough place to go.
It was okay. It was in decline at that point.
Yeah, it was in serious decline. As all theaters were probably in 1998. And I remember you went to go use the restroom after the movie was over, and my brother and I were waiting for you, and you came out, and you looked like you had just seen a dead body. and you were like, oh my God. And we were like, what's wrong, dude? And he was like, I guess you had to take a poop. Or you do pee sitting down, don't you?
No.
Is this too
no.
Well, well,
I mean, they're more than likely either the urinals were, I mean, I'm not saying that I've never, I often will pee sitting down. But
well,
usually,
often is the word. That's what I meant. I'm saying the word.
You wipe
often.
As well?
Well, I didn't want
to. I usually start out with the pee and then go on to the chocolate. Okay, you know, start with the lemonade, go on to the chocolate.
I didn't want to insinuate he was taking a shit.
But
he wouldn't know this unless he went into a stall. So I didn't know if he was shitting or pissing, but
you forget, it's a movie theater, so it could have been the urinals were all taken up, or there might have been like one space and I didn't want to fill up the space in the urinal. You know, so people are kind of peeing about that sort of thing. I'm much less so in my old age. So,
well, I think he had the Drizzling Dugans, but I'm not sure which one it is. he comes out and he just maps out this absolute crime scene in one in one of the stalls where he said, and I was like, oh man, they just, you know, back up a toilet. He's like, no, he said, you were like, it looked like somebody had climbed up
on the seat,
stood on the seat, and
had to have grabbed both sides of the
stall walls.
Yes.
The
for support. You needed support under these circumstances.
And then shat onto the tank.
And I know I made sure to use the past tense shat upon the well, there wasn't a tank. It was just the chrome plumbing.
Yeah. The chrome.
So they must have been like a soft serve chocolate ice cream machine and just drizzled all over the chrome plumbing.
And dude, I'm telling you, it looked like
the size and consistency. Well, not the consistency, but definitely the size. It, you know, had the little like taper at the end.
This is too descriptive, too descriptive. But I mean, I just remember the look on your face. You were like pale, and
that took some effort. I mean, somebody really had to. I think maybe they had some time in Japan to be able to squat in that manner.
I don't know if that should be in there. But there was it was this mix of you were impressed, but just seen. It was like a horrific moment in your life. But also you were kind of impressed.
Well,
we were laughing about it, and it was just the most hilarious. This is not the last Diablo Frank stall story I will ever tell this podcast by a long shot, but that's one of the better ones.
Well, there's that element of surreality because the shit was not where the shit belonged, and it took effort to get the shit to that place.
Story of my life.
So just trying to figure out the logistics of it was part of it. I think but the wheels were just turning. It's like, how did this person accomplish horrible act?
You were like working through it with us. You were like, they had to have.
Yeah, we were... It was a discussion.
Stood on and then held the wall. Like, you were just like, how did this happen? Or was it a poltergeist? Did a poltergeist do this?
This is precarious, too. Well, and the thing is, too, I don't remember there being anything in the bowl. So I'm wondering if the dude flushed. You know, I mean, did he actually like do like a landmine dance where he made sure to plunge his own shit, like his shitty towel or something?
All right, okay,
yeah,
okay,
whatever.
Stop. You're gonna make me throw up. But anyway, that was 1998. We still tell that story fondly. That's 20 years. Well, this is the 20th anniversary of that story.
Look, if you'd been there 20 years later, you would still remember it too.
On your deathbed, you're going to remember that. Anyway, let's watch this fucking movie.
Which, by the way, starts in, what was it, 1957 instead? 1967. So they were enforcing the rule of superheroes in that day. Everybody was 29 years old. So I do not think Wesley Snipes was actually 29 when this movie came out.
We just watched the opening to Blade, right? I think the best part of the movie, right? I mean, it's sort of...
The bloodbath, yeah.
Yeah, the bloodbath, right? So, I mean, is there a better opening scene? I mean, I think this is right up there with any opening scene of any of these comic book movies ever.
Oh, it's definitely one of the best opening scenes of a comic book movie. One of the best opening scenes of a vampire movie.
Oh, is it rated R?
You could definitely argue that it shoots its load because there's no point in this movie, probably no point in any of the movies that's as good as the Blood Rave. It just completely announces what the fuck it is. Why don't you describe it right quick though.
Dude is driving with a chick. They're going to some party.
Where's the party held at?
It's in like, it's a meat locker, right? Like, so there's like...
Like a processing plant.
Yeah, cow cadavers.
Meat hooks everywhere.
Yeah, meat hooks. And then he notices as he's walking through this back room that he was like, what the hell was that? And you can see their human bodies on one.
Obscured by the semi-opaque plastic.
Plastic, right? And then she speaks some weird dialect towards a bouncer and he's like, what the fuck? What would you just say? And then they go in, and then of course some big intimidating bouncer dude. And he opens the door and they go in. It's just this crazy rave with the classic Blade techno music going.
We already did it earlier.
Yeah. Microchip. Aquawaka. You know, and as he's walking through, she just like ditches him and is walking towards some other girl. And what I love about what I love about the scene is as the camera's panning around, they're showing you all the baddies that are going to be throughout the movie.
Right.
And I love it because they're just, you're giving you little
taste.
Little taste.
They pause on them just long enough so you know this guy's going to be somebody later
they're
on.
They're going to be, and then at one point he bumps shoulders with
Steven Dorff. Or we'll call him Deacon Frost, who's also from the comics.
Deacon Frost.
That's the guy who, if I remember, he turns Blade, I think. I think in the comics, I have to check the comics. Deacon Frost turned somebody in the Dracula comics. I don't remember if it was actually Blade, though.
So as he's walking through, he's all like, hey, like trying to dance with some chick, and she like shoves him, like everybody, because they all know he's not a vampire.
Well, he tries to go back to dance with Tracy Lords, famous underage porn star Tracy Lords.
I was hoping that I'd get to talk to you maybe for a minute.
About what?
Well, it's very personal. You know.
Maybe you ought to speak to your parents.
I can't. Can I just talk to you for 1 minute?
And that's the one who brought him to the show. And then he tries to go dance with her, but she's already getting her les on. And the butch wants nothing to do with this douchebag.
Right.
I love too. The dude is like obviously douchey. They just made a point of dressing him to be as douchey as possible.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful he didn't go on to anything else. So I'm not distracted by that. And I just acknowledge this guy's a douche.
So then finally he feels something hit his, and he's all like, man, what's going on here?
Something
like,
wet hits him.
Everybody's a jerk off to him, right? And then something wet hits him and he looks down at his hand and it's blood. And then the sprinkler systems turn on. It starts raining blood and all the vampires are putting their arms up in the air all around him as it's really cool because he's looking down and they've all got their hands in the sky all around him and the blood starts raining down everywhere and the DJ's like bloodbath and I'll never forget the DJ because it's the dual headlights
he's
got the headlights on both sides so everybody's drenched in blood and he's looking around like oh my god and they've all of a sudden got vampire teeth and they're
acting
all
very aggressively
notching
toward
at him and everything and they start beating him up and he crawls out and
especially that Anthony Kiedis looking motherfucker
he punches him and so
I just gotta say I love how effective that scene is because it's fucking terrifying.
Because
I've already got a thing for zombies, and one of my big things is getting like a crowd of zombies around you, and there's no fucking escape.
Very claustrophobic. Like,
freaking you out. And the fact that it's not just that, but they're also drenched in blood, extremely aggressive, and have full command of their capabilities. It's not like a zombie where they're at least kind of dumb, so you got a chance against them. Full on vampires. So you're like, oh shit, I am super, super duper fucked. And it's a terrifying sequence. It's the scariest thing that ever happened in the Blade Show.
Especially, let me take you back to 1998. We were not expecting this coming into the movie.
Especially at the very beginning of the movie.
We were expecting comic book movie. And from the very beginning, when she's driving him to the place, she's like, what you got down there? And he's like, a heat-seeking missile. And then she grabs him by the Dongosaurus, and it's like tugging on his pants. And I'm already like, what is going on in this comic book movie? And then there's a couple F-bombs that get dropped once he gets in there. Several. I think he's like, what the fuck? What the fuck? And so I'm already like, okay, this is different. And the blood comes on. And then anyway, so as they're beating him up, he starts crawling out. And when he crawls out, everybody's drenched in blood, except he gets to the feet of Blade. They're like, he's pristinely clean.
Yeah, you open with his feet, and he's on the white porcelain part of the area, the only clean area that we can see on the shot. And we're just seeing his feet, but you already know, oh, shit.
And the vampires know, because you can hear them whispering.
Because they stop, yeah.
The Daywalker. Daywalker. And they're all like, whoa, like, what do we do? And then he proceeds to just fuck them up. And I love, and because that was the other thing. So you're expecting...
Well, they pan up his body, too, so you can see he's got the body armor, he's got the leather trench coat, he's got the sunglasses, so you can tell this is a bad motherfucker.
Right. And anyway, so then he starts, the first thing he does, he pulls out a double barrel shotgun and he shoots a dude. So you're expecting, okay, he shot a vampire. Well, you don't just shoot a vampire, they just fall down. So you're expecting to see some blood. And instead, I'm sitting there in the theater in 1998, and the dude's body turns to ash with his skeleton, like, writhing on whatever, like, he hits a beam and his skeleton, like, sort of, like, bends over the beam from the impact.
It's like he's burning from the middle outward to his extremities. So you're seeing, like, from the point of impact up and down, he's, like, burning out and turning into skeleton and then turning into ash while he's still in motion.
And I just remember sitting in the crowd and people are like, holy shit, like, this is not what we were just thinking he was going to shoot people, right? Which is a pretty common thing in 80s and 90s action.
Or stab.
But we know what would happen when you shoot a fake gun at a fake actor. You don't expect him to explode into ash. And then, on today's televisions where it's everything's like super, super, super
high def.
It doesn't look as good, but you know, on the terrible screens in 1998, it looked really good, dude, in a nice dark theater.
I think it still looks nice. I don't think it looks bad.
Yeah, for being 1998,
it 98 big
it
time.
Aged a bit.
Yeah, but you just have to understand. Man. Like watching this now, I'm like, oh, that's not shocking. He's okay. So he shot a vampire and he CGI'd into a skeleton. But dude, in 98, we were like, what? And it's a comic book movie, and we were like, what? I just remember everybody in the theater's like, what just happened, dude? Like, this movie just explodes.
It declares its intentions right from the jump.
Absolutely.
This is not your bullshit comic book movie. What it reminds me of, David Goyer is the screenwriter of this one, and watching that sequence reminds you, oh yeah, there was a time when people wanted to be in the Dave Goyer business. He made a point of saying, you know, working with the filmmakers, in particular, I think he was working with Wesley Snipes, where they just agreed, Blade is never going to be a happy meal. These movies have to be hard R-rated to get this thing over, so we're just going to come at it with that mentality. And the movie absolutely states its intention to kick your fucking ass right from jump. But Mr. Fix-It.
Wait, hold on. I just want to wrap the scene up. So,
but it's related, though. You and Pussycat used to watch Buffy the Vampire an awful lot.
Yeah.
They did the dusting thing on Buffy before they did it on Blade. She would stab people with a stake and they would turn to dust, right?
Well, they would freeze and then just, like, dust, yeah.
Okay. So, but they didn't do the skeleton part.
I don't remember that, no.
And they didn't do the fire part.
No.
But Blade probably did borrow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, for that.
I would strongly agree with that.
You and Pussycat also used to watch Xena Warrior Princess.
Again,
and she
we watched it quite a bit.
And she had the razored boomerang.
Yeah, or the round thing.
Not unlike Blade's razor boomerang in this movie.
I would agree with that.
I just
somewhat.
Think he owes a debt to the chicks. I think that would be acknowledged.
The chicks?
The badass action chicks of the 1990s. It's like he's borrowing everything from both of them.
I would strongly agree with that. Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's very
he
similar.
He didn't go, la, 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 la.
Yeah, true. He didn't go, la,
thankfully,
la, la.
Yeah.
But Buffy, of course.
He won up them, obviously. Because, you know, I remember.
Well, no, he just went
in
an R-rated version. I mean, yeah. Buffy has some, I think, great episodes. Hush, to me, is still one of the scariest fucking episodes.
I really don't want to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
But it's unavoidable because there was always that conflict between Buffy and Blade.
That was kind of hot at that time, was the vampires. I guess that was kind of hot, yeah, wasn't
Vampire
it?
Vampire Lestat was not a few years before that.
Yeah,
vampires were big in the 90s.
Interview with a Vampire and all that stuff was coming out. I remember the books.
But there was a direct competition because Buffy was a Vampire Slayer and then Blade was the Vampire Slayer. And there was a lot of fan mashups in that time period.
I didn't think about that.
And of course, a few years later when Twilight came out, they liked to Photoshop him into that going after Edwards.
A few years later when Twilight came out? Quite a few years later.
Almost 20 years then? No, about 10 years.
So,
because Twilight's already come and gone.
I was talking about the scene, not Buffy. So a few other things there, but like I remember when they're panning around showing the other characters, that dude's getting an obvious blowjob.
That too, yeah.
And I was just like, I'm like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? And then it ends.
Well, you're talking about how you love the time lapse at the beginning, very beginning too, showing the shadows creeping over the
right, yeah,
city and stuff.
And then at the very end of that scene, he takes one of the main baddies, impales him up against like a porcelain shower kind of a thing, right?
Right.
And then, and it's like, I'm tired of cutting you up. I figured I'd try fire this time. And then he just sets the dude on fire alive.
Screaming.
And it's just
it
like,
relates to a charred, still moving, but
yeah, basically
corpse.
One-ups. And then the cops come in and are like, put that guy out. And they're having, and I'm like, it one-ups the, like, oh my God, he's blowing up these vampires and turning into skeletons. And then he lights one alive on fire screaming. And I was just like, well, this is going to be a different ride. Like, this isn't Batman. You know what I mean? Like, this is definitely different. So,
the funny thing is that scene you just described, the one thing that always bothered me, and just watching now, still to this day bothers me, is that same vampire before he impales him on the wall, you see where there's this hesitation where, like, he stops, where, like, they were setting up for the shot, and he's in position, and it's too long.
Yeah.
Like, he's waiting, and then he launches, and he sticks. I remember in the theater, when I saw that, it kind of annoyed me. Like, it bothered
me. You
tell
they were setting up an effect.
Yeah.
For me, it was the fist pump that always annoys me.
Yeah, the fist pump.
So cheeseball.
Yeah, he looks like McAllister from Home Alone when he's doing that shit.
Yeah.
That's the one false note, I think, on the opening introduction to Blade.
Anyway, so. Other than that, I just absolutely love that
scene.
Yeah,
I think it's a cool scene.
I got something to tell you. I don't know how to explain it, but I'm different.
Crazy?
Nah, I'm saying I'm not like you. I'm not like others. It's like I've been here before. Four's the domain. Don't say, rhyme gon' bang. Make it deep in the paper, the flame. Ignite like propane. No sweat, no blood, no pain, no gain. No cards, no deal, no dice, no game, no dang. I'm giving you bitches something vicious. Got them falling to pieces like porcelain dishes. I'm dirty. I get all the way down on the ground with what?
Dude, he set on fire, woke up in hospital, killed a guy, bit a girl. Blade showed up, took girl, trying to save girl, talked to Chris Christopherson. Chris Christopherson was like, rawr, rawr,
rawr. Well, who's Chris Christopherson? He's the guy who helps him. He's his buddy.
Yeah, Whistler.
Probably the guy who trained him. Whistler. Yeah.
And he was like, I was a Whistler.
he's like, he tells, of course, Blade tells Whistler that she's turning. So he pumps her full of Papa John juice.
Papa John's garlic sauce.
To cure her. Apparently the cure
only
for
the
her
finest
vampirism
Papa
is
John.
Papa John's garlic sauce.
Actually, I don't think that Papa
hero.
John would approve of that particular usage, though.
No. Papa John's is totally against vampires, because he's totally against vampires.
He's a Republican.
Take American job.
No, he's a Republican. He's totally pro-vampire.
They take American jobs.
Yeah, but they're foreign people.
Did you see that table?
They're white foreign people, though.
I guess that's true. You think the vampires are meddling in our elections, you guys? Hey, let's change the subject. And then they go to like a boardroom where it's a bunch of crusty-looking vampires, and they're talking like, this blade is a problem. You have to get rid of this blade. Hey, you guys. This blade guy. An offshore
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. This offshore accounts are not looking so good. And then...
I kind of like the... I guess he would be the Asian Pacific vampire. The one with all the tattoos. Oh,
So he's chewing out... What's his name? Deacon Frost.
All kinds of...
Yeah, he's talking vampire or whatever.
You're doing like German and then you point out... Yeah, no.
I thought it sounded more vampire.
So he's talking to him in their native...
I think you're doing pretty fly for a white guy's opening in fact.
In their vampire language. He's chewing out Deacon Frost because they think Deacon Frost having all these raves and stuff is being reckless. And he's not even... You're not even full blood.
I wonder if the Harry Potter thing came out of this. Like all the big thing about half plus, full blood.
Every time I hear y'all say Deacon Frost, I'm thinking of Deacon from Jesus Christ, the 70s band.
Deacon Jones?
No, jeez, never mind. I fucking dropped.
This is terrible.
Oh, it was such a good one.
No, well, that's debatable. So they keep insulting him by calling him half-blood or whatever. And then finally...
And he's making a big deal, too. He's like, no, we should be in charge. We shouldn't be worried about making the politicians being pissed at us. We should be running this show. And they're like, you're just a half-blood.
Because they're like, we have to keep a low profile, Deacon Frost.
I was born the vampire. You returned.
Stop having these wild parties, Deacon Frost.
And I want to say, too, not to be a downer, no way are you going to get blood through the sprinkler system. No fucking way.
You think it clots too?
It would absolutely clot too much. It's too damn thick. Like, if you try to draw blood out of a person, you have to use a really big gauge needle because it won't flow correctly. So, you know, not only are you going to have clotting, but it's just not going to go through the system.
Here's the deal. You can see
how the blood was dripping off them. The vampires were using fake blood.
Let's talk for a second.
Maybe they had like true blood in the pipes
or
something.
Let's be real. I agree that you know a lot about blood. I will disagree that you know a lot about sprinkler systems. And I don't think that you're qualified at all to talk about the size of the pipes or the flow of sprinkler
systems.
But
the viscosity.
I'm not doubting there's going to be viscosity breakdown. But I don't think that you can just rule out that they don't have a system. They're using coagulants or discoagulants or
anticoagulants
to thin the blood out to keep their sprinkler system fly for their rave party. I don't think that you're qualified to jump to that conclusion.
I guess if you really like pumped a bunch of Coumadin into there, maybe you could get it through the sprinkler system. Maybe. I think you just no prize this whole sequence. Right. Also, bringing up, Whistler was not the mentor in the comics. The mentor was apparently a fellow...
Hummer.
Stick.
Jamal Afari. You guys are pretty far from that. He was a jazz musician who was attacked by vampires. He apparently, I think, was a vampire stalker himself, ran around with a silver cane from like the Wolfman movies. When young Eric Brooks came upon this guy getting attacked by vampires, they teamed up to fight with the vampires, and the dude proceeded to train Blade not only in the art of blades and earning the name Blade, but also in jazz musicianship. Also worth noting, it was from the comics that Blade's mom had been bitten by a vampire. What they don't mention is that Deacon Frost in the comics was actually pretending to be a doctor who was helping Blade's mom through some difficult issues, and it was after he bit her that Blade got the in utero infection of vampirism. And the only reason why Deacon Frost did not kill Blade as well is because Blade's mom was in a brothel. She worked there, and the other sex workers apparently ran off Deacon Frost before he had a chance to kill the newborn child. This is from the old black and white comics, but of course I didn't read those comics, so I want to credit Rosie Knight from The Nerdist, who had this really cool article, 7 Weird Things That You Probably Didn't Know About Blade. But apparently the source material is from the Marvel Black and Whites, where they were able to get a little bit more PG-13 with their content.
I'm not so sure that doesn't also sound pretty cool.
That sounds really cool, yeah. I like sex-positive vampire origin stories. So,
is that the only one?
No, actually, vampires are pretty sex-positive when you think about it. It's all about sexual liberation. It's a lot of
seduction. That's true.
But anyway, another thing I want to mention, I notice, even though Wesley Snipes is still leaning into the badass in these early scenes, he's still got a lot more humanity than he has as the movie series progresses. It feels like he got way into Blade being just like this humorless killing machine, and I actually like his little moments of humor, and like when the cops try to bust him at the hospital, he's like, motherfucker, do you know who I am? Or some shit like that.
Are you out of your damn mind?
Yeah. I think that that's something that gets lost over the course of the Blade movies, apparently, is he just, Wesley really went up his own ass. But I think it bears mentioning, we've seen the reaction that Black Panther got. And you watch Blade, and you've got a black hero, and you've got a beautiful black female romantic interest. And that was so rare in action movies, and certainly in big-budget horror comic book hybrid things. I'm sure that contributed to this movie's being embraced, but besides the fact that it's badass, but also, this is like the black superhero for years and years. This is like the one we had. It's like him and like Meteor Man. I don't think you can minimize that. It's so important that you have two black leads in this movie. If you're looking for a black superhero, this was the only game in town for years and years.
Yeah, and he was the only good.
I mean, let's think about it. Black Panther came out this year. It took 20 years from Blade breaking the Marvel curse and being the first successful Marvel movie to getting a second major black superhero in his own movie. So I think that he whet the appetite, though.
And it's Steely Dan Deacon Blues.
That's way too deep of a cut, dude. Yeah. You grew up on Steely Dan. Yeah. I don't think the general populace is going to catch
that. Every time I hear it, I hear the song in my head.
Is that at least a single? Probably not, huh?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, no, too way too deep.
He grew up in my house, yeah. So, but every time I hear his name, that's what I think of. So,
props. When did that come out, though?
Oh, dude, probably we're thinking late 70s.
So Deacon Frost probably predates that.
Will you stop making everything in this movie having to be based on something else?
Holy Christ. I'm saying Deacon Frost maybe inspired Steely
Deacon
Dan.
Blues.
The other way around. This is Blade was the OG on this one.
Oh my God. Maybe Blade is a half-blood prince from Harry Potter. And this, give me a break, dude. Learn to work the saxophone. I play just what I feel. Learn to work the saxophone.
Deacon Frost was working with a grotesquely obese Asian vampire to unlock the secrets of the vampire libraries of untranslatable ancient texts using Pearl, the vampire librarian, I guess you could call her, and modern computers of the time, which looked, the computer graphics were pretty solid. It was way better than, say, Hackers from a couple of years earlier.
Whatever.
I do agree, though, with Mac that perhaps the wireframes that were created using the vampire texts inspired Resident Evil's use of wireframes, but still believable for 98. They unlock some sort of
legend. Blood God.
I guess it's all qubits and shit, but it's basically ancient design for a chamber that's supposed to bring about the age of the Blood God. While this is going on, Blade is using the Lady Doctor. Do we remember her name?
Lady Doctor.
Okay, Lady Doctor. As bait to draw Deacon's forces, including familiars, human beings that have tattoos on the backs of their necks, who are working for Frost in daylight. They're trying to go after her because since she knows about the existence of vampires and she's not on the take, like all the police, because they make a point of telling you all the cops are on the take, that she's got to get taken out. She is stalked by some dudes with the neck tattoos, but they leave her alone. Then she's confronted by a cop who turns out to also be a familiar who runs blood to various people whenever they need it in the vampire circles. Blade steps in once again. They beat the fuck out of this cop in broad daylight repeatedly. I'm sure that there's some subtext there, and again, the following year, The Matrix did some fairly similar stuff, too. I'm not saying one ripped off the other, but I think that both of them were kind of hooking onto the same anti-authoritarian vibe. Ultimately, cop gets killed. Blade and the Lady Doctor torture Pearl until they find the chamber where they're hiding all their ancient scrolls and shit. Blade gets jumped by a bunch of vampires, including the revived Donald Logue, named Quinn in this movie. He'd had his arm chopped off after he had gone after Lady Doctor and had been burnt alive, of course, but he's slowly been regenerating, not unlike in Deadpool, where he goes from no arm to a stump to grizzled almost 100% arm. Whistler shows up to save Blade and Lady Doctor. They end up in a long subway sequence, action sequence, lots of cool little effects in there. One of my favorite bits is when Quinn's face gets shoved into the subway and is slowly eroding. There's also a moment where Blade has to grab the subway while it's in motion and to escape, and they do this super speed thing, which they've done repeatedly throughout the movie. Mac, you already said what a fan you are of it, and I like those stylish elements too, because not only does it make the movie pace stay up, but it's a nice little, I know the guys like Sam Raimi did that some in show, movies like Evil Dead, where it's basically like almost a Keystone Cops thing going back to the silence, but it's done in a different way by Norringham, the director, and it's just cool. It's got a nice little pop to it. You'll have the cars racing through the streets, and then you'll pause for a second to see the vampires feasting on some lady on the, you know, on a street corner and stuff. So it lets you know this is a dark city, that everything we know about the world, again, very Matrixy, is just like the sugar coating on top of this rotten apple. Is it New York that they're in? A vampirism.
Sure.
That's actually where we're at now, right?
Well, no, we get back and she talks to, because Whistler escaped too, and she's talking to Whistler about his family or how he got into this whole thing. He talks about how they took a drifter in and the drifter turned out to be a vampire and just basically tortured and killed his wife and two daughters. And ever since then, he's just trying to kill as many as he possibly can. But even he and Blade are starting to recognize that something different's been happening lately and there's something moving around in the vampire ranks.
And they mentioned too, I suppose, that while Whistler was off hunting vampires, he came across a 13-year-old boy that had been living off of the homeless. He takes him in and he manages to, why did he come up with the serum? Blade basically is held in check through this concoction that Whistler's come up with. Is it like silver or what is it?
I think it's like a blood mixture, but it's not like people blood.
Yeah,
so he doesn't have to eat people. He can have this substitute blood.
So I guess Whistler's like Neville from I Am Legend, where he becomes like an amateur scientist and manages to come up with a cure thing.
Blood. Artificial blood.
Exactly, yeah. Predates true blood. The other thing, though, is that we get the best line of the movie, one we've quoted often in jest. Do you want to give us the line, Fix It?
Which one?
What's the line from the Blade movies?
Motherfuckers always trying to steal.
I skate uphill. That's the fucking line. Yeah, that's the fucking line. Really.
That's not the fucking line.
Some motherfuckers are always trying to. Yeah,
Blade has all of our strengths, none of our weaknesses.
Oh, but
he's
also
a hybrid human vampire. He's a daywalker.
That's more like being snarky to somebody. The line is,
we use the line in jest often in our lives.
Yeah, but the line is also some motherfuckers. Some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill, though.
Fine, that's okay. The dumb line. The good line is the one I read.
It's the worst, but it's the best. But what I was going to say is that I was really impressed. Chris Christopherson takes this shit seriously. Whereas, you know, but some of these kind of old school actors pop up in these comic book movies and they kind of hokey it up, or they're trying to just pick up a collect a paycheck.
Yeah, it's a joke to them. They're just doing it for a laugh.
Chris Christopherson is legit grizzled, serious.
Well,
war vet.
Admittedly, Chris Christopherson is always grizzled, serious. Yeah, he really only has the one mode.
He's Chris Christopherson.
He's not bringing it at a half level. He's full level Chris.
But he's talking about how the vampire made him pick which one of his kids he was going to kill first and all this
Sophie's Choice thing, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and so he's like, so we just try and kill every single one of them. Like, damn, like Whistler's fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Everybody in this movie, I think, is bringing their A game. They're taking it seriously. Even Stephen Dorff, who is the most broad actor in the movie, he's doing the whole rock star swagger thing, so it makes sense for his character to be a little bit bigger, a little bit more arch. I remember when this movie came out, critics singled out Nebushi Wright for critique. They just thought that she was sleepwalking through the role, that she didn't bring anything to it. No, I disagree, though. I think that they were so used to white actresses in Batman movies screaming their goddamn heads off throughout the whole thing, or vamping it up and being very big and arch themselves. I think if you look at Wright's performance, she's underplaying it, but I think she's doing it on purpose. It's not unlike Jennifer Connelly in Incredible Hulk or in The Hulk, where she's an intelligent woman, she's a scientist, she's looking at this rationally, she's obviously there's some element of shock, she's freaking out over what's going on, but she's holding her shit together. I think that you see those emotions play across her face. I don't think the reviewers saw it at the time. When you get racial, I think there's a lot of white reviewers who didn't see that this is a person who's going to react to things differently than their expectations of what a white chick was going to do in a superhero movie. And while I'm on a racial tip, one thing I do like about Blade, besides the fact that almost everybody he relates to except for Whistler is black, but also he's a hard ass, and so they're constantly like, oh well, you should have just killed this person, you should have, you know, you don't be a soft heart, it's too dangerous. Every time he has that lapse into humanity, it's almost always for a black person. While he's in the archives, there's a little black girl and he should know better, but he still tries to, like,
take,
you know,
my hand or whatever.
Yeah you can see that he has greater empathy for black people than he does for anybody else, and I'm actually very cool with that, because you don't see that in movies very often. I wonder who brought that, if it was in the screenplay, if it was Wesley Snipes doing that. But I also dug that the little black girl was fucking badass. I forgot all about that sequence where she turns out, I don't know if she's a vampire or just a really kick-ass familiar, but she does a really awesome series of kicks and shit, and really cool. It reminded me, Marvel, after Secret Wars, was going to launch a new Blade series that was going to be about his daughter, but there's a big hubbub because Tim Seeley of Hack Slash and other fame was going to write it. It's a white dude, and so I think a lot of people got hacked off that here's another white dude supposed to be writing black characters, and Marvel at that point had never hired a black woman to write any of their comics. Since then, they've hired a number of them, mostly working on stuff like Worlds of Wakanda. But I think that it was social media backlash that kept that happening, but also there's a lot of speculation that at some point Marvel has said they're going to bring Blade back. And there is some question as to whether or not they would bring back the male Blade, or perhaps this daughter concept that they had. And it's funny to me because in the meantime, we've had Shuri come up, and a lot of people feel that Shuri stole the show on Black Panther. She's getting her own comic book series based on her popularity since the movie came out. And I'm wondering if that female Blade could have had that Shuri opportunity if she had come along when she was supposed to have. I see that little girl, it's like, hey, she's kind of doing the whole girl Blade thing.
And I picked it up with you too. He's definitely, the little girl and with Doctor. The other thing is, Stephen Dorff is Christian Slatering his ass off in this movie, dude. He is going full Christian Slater. That last scene where he's talking to Pearl on the laptop and they spin it around and he's talking. I'm like, dude, this is just like he's doing a Christian Slater impression to this guy who's so fucking
And there
funny.
Are tons of people that think that Christian Slater's entire career is a Jack Nicholson
ripoff, right?
But it works. He makes it work. I mean, he's not like he's not doing an impression, but you feel like he's sort of like doing like a Jack Sparrow kind of channeling thing there. Yeah.
Well, also in Interview with Vampire, Christian Slater.
Executionist, flip a triple six into three knives, call the crucifix. Each man holding, no man falling. Coast clear and premieres in the green tank rolling. Get on your post and stand clear. They wanting to shut us down, but the whole team's here. What? You act like a tweet or something. This ain't no Desert Storm bullshit war, we all dumping.
Whistler talking about his family or whatever after the subway scene. Blade did some shit. Whistler got killed.
Yeah, the vampires got into their stronghold, kidnapped Nebushi Wright, and
they
brutalized Whistler and started him on the process of turning, though he was still alive.
Before that, they killed German guy because they showed that they put like a really thick like foundation makeup on them.
Yeah, maybe they're wearing motorcycle outfits with a helmet.
Maybe it's Maybelline. I don't know. And they take him out on the coast and they strip him down, and there's this gnarly him melting and then finally
popping. What I like is they pull his teeth his vampire teeth out beforehand to show that they had killed him, because Stephen Dorff intends to take over the board of directors of the vampires. I thought that was a nice touch.
And then
because again, there's a lot of derivative stuff in this movie, like
vampire movie.
Well, it's like, okay, take for instance, one of the distinctive things about Blade were the neck tattoos, and 2 years earlier you had From Dusk Till Dawn, and then you were pointing out some similarities to a movie that came out shortly afterward,
Blade and The Matrix. Yeah, that there was just some, I mean, people have accused The Matrix of ripping off all sorts of stuff, whether or not it's manga or, you know, Ghost in the Shell.
I think they were too close together to actually rip off Blade specifically, but a lot of similar influences apparently.
Well,
you have Bullet Time, you've got a lot of the...
Kind of Bullet Time. We see bullets
in slow motion flying through the air as a guy's dodging away from it, yeah.
Lots of trench coats. The scene where he goes to rescue Dr. Lady, you have all these dudes, there's a bunch of pillars in the bottom floor of the building. A
lot of water.
A glass, and he crashes in, and he's shooting, and everything's in slow motion as the glass, you know, just like the lobby scene in The Matrix that was really big. Now, The Matrix was 10,000 times bigger, that scene, but just a lot of the same imagery with all these dudes in SWAT gear coming down and hiding behind the pillars and stuff. Just a lot of similarities, I should say. It could just be this special effects crew ended up working on The Matrix, and they took some of their tiny ideas here.
Matrix was probably in production while this movie was getting released, or after, before this movie was getting released.
Maybe they're working on both jobs and decided to use a little, or maybe the software company that came up with the bullet time concept. They showed their presentation to 20 different studios.
But honestly, I saw that bullet time effect in a country song around the same time.
Well, we're not doing the spin thing, though. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about actually following the bullets in an action.
Him going ba 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 shooting the bullets, and then you're showing.
Been in other movies before.
We're just pointing out that these two came out right next to each other, and they were both using the same technique. And then they've got the trench coats, the shooting up the lobby,
a lot of similar aesthetic. Yeah, so it's interesting that Blade was a decent size hit. It cost $45 million. It made three times its budget back, but it didn't get credit for the cultural impact that The Matrix had. It wasn't as big of a hit as The Matrix, but it's playing in a lot of the same areas, and yet people don't talk about Blade the way they talked about The Matrix. And there certainly wasn't the kind of cult around Blade that sprang up over The Matrix.
No.
I don't remember Blade really getting a lot of promotional push.
Yeah, it was a New Line movie.
Yeah.
But I saw it in comics,
but I didn't really see it like... elsewhere.
I remember seeing trailers on TV just like with any other movie, though. But that was about the extent of it, not like big billboards or anything like that.
But after it came out,
Matrix had about the same kind of promotional push, though. I don't remember there being a huge push on The Matrix either.
Dude, it was on the back of every fucking comic book I picked up, that one page.
So was Blade, though.
I don't remember Blade being on every page.
I remember that because it was mostly black with the red background, and he had his back to you, and you saw the
sword.
Katana sword blade in his.
Okay.
So I think they got a similar push. I think just Matrix was embraced in a way that Blade wasn't.
Well, The Matrix had bigger actor. I mean, it had a broader idea.
Well, it's funny though. That was the whole idea of this world within worlds that I'm sure people are like, oh, we've never seen that, where Blade is just a comic book.
You got the world that you know and then the underworld.
It's just a comic book movie.
You guys were talking about crossover, though. The original idea to do Blade, they talked about as far back as 1992 with LL Cool J. And at one point, they wanted to do it as sort of like a spoofy, kind of like lighthearted kind of movie. David S. Goyer was the one who actually made sure that this was going to be a hard R, badass action movie, but also he wanted the comic book good versus evil dynamic as well, because he always considered it to be a superhero movie first and then with the horror and action elements as well. So you got to give Goyer credit for that. He also was the one who really highlighted the racial strife between the full blood and whole blood vampires, and he wanted to use that as an analog for racial inequality and the like, because he wrote the script and it was clear after he'd written the script that it was a good script, but it was going to be expensive. And the whole point was New Line wanted to do a black superhero movie in the realm of about $10 million. They wanted to get that urban audience that had made money off of Juice for them previously, and so they didn't want to spend that kind of money, and they basically had a scale based on the actor. If they could get Lawrence Fishburne to do the movie, they'd give you $20 million. If they could get Wesley Snipes, they're willing to go $30 million, but they really wanted Denzel for 40, and they'd give you like $40 million if they got Denzel. So it's interesting that Lawrence Fishburne ended up being in The Matrix. He could have been their $20 million Blade. I don't think that would have worked. I think that Goyer always wanted Wesley Snipes. He was always the best fit, and the reason why he ended up doing this, he was wanting to do Black Panther with John Singleton, and he was pursuing that, and that fell through, and Blade was sort of the backup plan, and he was glad that he had that backup plan, because he was perfect for the role, and this is the one that got made. But at one point they were trying to get Jet Li to play Deacon Frost, but he decided not to do the movie because he went and did Lethal Weapon 4. But I think in terms of the reception action in the movie, part of the problem is because you've got all these black actors. I think that it had an impact because Lethal Weapon 4, I think we all acknowledge, is a garbage movie. 52% on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie is only 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is not 2% better than fucking Lethal Weapon 4.
No way.
And I think part of it is you probably had a bunch of the old-ass, old-guard, non-genre-friendly critics like your Rex Reeds who weren't into the movie. But I think that maybe the movie was too black for them. I think that's why it's 54% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is some bullshit.
I was really surprised when we were looking at that and it showed 54%. Yeah. I was like, really?
It's not a perfect movie. There isn't like a ton of plot to it or anything.
It's enjoyable, though.
But it's a really good action movie and really stylishly directed. You were asking, too, about Stephen Norringham, or Norrington. I keep fucking it up. It's one of the two. So they actually, you'll be into this, fix it. David Fincher was wrapping up Seven. He got a hold of a copy of the Blade script. He liked it. And one of the producers was saying, David, you're not going to make this movie. Just don't do it. But he got into it. He offered some ideas on the movie. And they're like, if you get involved with this, we're going to waste a year on this and it's not going to get made by you. And that's exactly what fucking happened. David Fincher wasted a year of their pre-production on not making this movie. Wow. The producer had seen Stephen Norrington had done a little small movie called, I think, Death Machine or something. It was just balls of the wall, cool ass movie. So they got him for this movie. Obviously, it worked out really well. He went on to do League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was a notoriously bad shoot. At one point, Sean Connery stole the master of the movie and ran off with it and edited himself, refusing to let the director have the final cut of the movie. After that, Norrington refused to direct any other movies for a number of years. He finally went back on that. And in fact, he was the original choice to do Ghost Rider, which I think would have been awesome. I really would have loved his Ghost Rider movie, but it fell through and he has yet to make another movie since then.
Oh, wow.
He's got one of those like Patty Jenkins like careers where it's like, oh, I made this movie in 2003 and then fucking nothing ever again until he's still waiting for his Wonder Woman, I guess. So poor guy. But yeah. So just I want to run through some of those while I'm doing research because I didn't want to forget a bunch of this. I thought very, very interesting information related to this movie. Oh, but I will say this too. The $45 million budget was probably an inflation on the original intended budget because the movie was originally shot. The test screening was about 2 hours and 20 minutes. It was a disaster. People particularly hated the ending. And so this movie had extensive reshoots and it's a lot different from the intended form apparently. So
I've seen ultimate.
Well, yeah. And let's not get to it because we're going to talk about that after we get to the actual ending, but just there were some issues with the movie that they thankfully corrected. Once again, reshoots get a bad rap, but this is clearly an instance where that shit worked out for them.
So Deacon Frost kills Whistler.
Well, he doesn't kill Whistler.
He's still alive. Whistler is able to tell, but he kidnaps Lady Doctor.
But Whistler's covered in blood. He's just left in a chair.
He had a bite mark.
And you know who he looks like in that sequence? Wade Garrett from Roadhouse. He's still alive, and basically he's trying to go...
you're just trying to redeem yourself. It's okay, man.
I love Kris Kristofferson in Roadhouse.
I know.
He tries to goad Blade into killing him so he doesn't turn into a vampire. That's like his worst fear. He can't do it, so Blade ends up leaving a gun in his hand. And he has to shoot himself. And there's this really nice sequence where the gun falls to the side of him, and you only see the hand just sort of drifting in the chair. So I thought that was really well done.
See his wedding ring, too.
Yeah.
Fucked up. Real, I'm telling you, this movie is good, man. Yeah. This movie is good. Anyway, so now, but he also told Blade, hey, we cracked the code. They're about to summon La Magra or whatever. You got to go get these dudes. But guess what? They need you to do it, so you can't go get these dudes. And he's like, bullshit, I'm going to go get them. And they kidnap Lady Doctor. So now he's going to go get Lady Doctor, and that's the Matrix
scene. I think he's mostly... I think Lady Doctor's like plus a side revenge. Benefit. It's mostly revenge.
Plus revenge. Oh, and so then he gets in there to do revenge on these guys, to partake in revenge. And his mom's there, and that's where you find out that Deacon Frost was the one that turned his mom.
Yeah, he hooked up with the mom all those years ago. They've been together this whole time. And he's
and
flirting
we find out
with...
that Blade's name is Eric.
Yes, so he is the same name as in the comic books. But what's interesting is, A, we established that Stephen Dorff has a thing for the black girls, and that's kind of cool because we've established earlier in the movie that Dorff has a black girlfriend, but then they forget about her for a long time because he's
hanging out with... keep her out of focus on purpose, so you know she's there, but you don't...
No, it's not just that. She doesn't go out with them. He has this white chick without white hair that keeps playing his girlfriend.
But I figured that's like his lieutenant.
The speedster.
They're holding hands while they're killing Udo Kier's character, so there's romance there, but they make sure to establish her at one point in the movie, and then when Blade shows up, it turns out it's his mom who is also the lover of Deacon Frost, and his mom's trying to instill Oedipal impulses in Blade. She's coming on to him, trying
very
to convert
weird
him.
Scene.
Very weird scene. But I think it works because you would expect vampires are kind of fucked up and weird.
That's
and
what vampires...
They don't have boundaries, and they're oversexed and all this kind of shit. So it actually kind of works.
Oh, you know there's inbreeding in the vampire ranks.
They're all about that pure bloodline and shit. So pretty fucked up, pretty cool.
Great sets, too.
Oh, yeah. And again, it has that very modern, 90s modern quality to it that The Matrix had, so.
Yeah.
Two-Face!
So, Mr. Fixit, why don't you give us the final act of the movie?
Where'd you leave off?
When Blade meets his mom, played by Sanaa Lathan. Very beautiful woman. Went on to a long career. She's still acting today.
So we get this really creepy, creepy mom-son reunion.
It turns out that the destiny is they need Blade to bring up
Daywalker with 12 full blood vampires.
The elders.
To bring the blood god, which could be dumped into anybody, I'm assuming.
Depending on which version of the movie you saw, because there's the version that was released in theaters, but the original version was they were going to bring up this Lovecraftian creature, this blood god.
They were going to summon the blood god.
Yeah. And then it turned out that Stephen Dorff's character, Deacon Frost, was going to become the blood god. We saw that sequence, which... This was a New Line picture. New Line released Spawn, and it had Spawn caliber effects for the Blood God. Yeah. Really ridiculous. But in the final version of the movie, it just sort of possesses Deacon Frost, and it's sort of a hybrid of Frost and the new power that he's gained.
Well, the sad thing the sad thing is that little extra thing we watched was the one thing this whole movie about, the one thing about this movie that bothered me was why.
That's actually a good thing to touch on. So beyond bringing up the Blood God, what else was going to happen to the Earth?
He was going
to
turn all the world into vampires. Like anyone who was touched by this wave of bloody rain,
the blood tide
was going to turn into a
but
vampire.
But again, the blood tide would be summoning this big blob, and the blob would move through and turn people into vampires.
If
it possesses Deacon Frost, there is no blood wave. He's just like a blood
super vampire.
It doesn't make any sense
sense.
But
no.
The ending we got is better. So who cares?
Apparently, they were going to keep humans in big blood bags.
Well, no, but see, they
could feed off the remaining humans, but everybody else is going to be a vampire.
Right.
So
but that always bothers me about these type of movies where they just going to rule the world. And what? Like, after you rule the world, okay, you've achieved your goal.
So,
the world is yours. What do you do next?
You're going to turn into vampires. What are you going to eat? And then literally we watch a deleted scene where she's all like, what are you going to eat then, guy, if you're so smart? And then he goes over and he's all like, hey, we got a bunch of bodies and bags.
They're just
like the pilot program I got here. Whoa.
Hey, it's a pilot program over here. We're going to drink out this blood and get a bunch of pints.
Well, what's funny is they say it's a pilot. We're going to have to step up production. It's like, but you're calling the blood god tonight. What the fuck? You're a little over, premature.
You got to assume it's a slow moving storm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like tropical blood storm, it just slowly moves,
you know. People can get out of the way. You know.
Hey, bada bing, I'm dodging this blood wave. surfing this blood wave.
But they've even got production art where there are people
in literal blood bags. Why are we doing a... what's his name?
Scaramucci?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought Dice Clay.
Yeah, why are we doing Dice Clay all of a sudden? Where did this come from?
I don't know. Just...
Hey, we got these bags. We got these blood bags.
What the hickory fucking dickory dock.
Oh, you got the blood wave. Where did this come from?
I have no idea.
What's the definition of a vagina? The box the penis comes in. Oh.
Hey, some motherfuckers are always trying to uphill. Hey.
Well, speaking of so they put Blade in a sarcophagus. They drain him. He manages to come out of the sarcophagus.
Hold on, wait.
Cool
visual because when the sarcophagus closes,
it puts razors on his wrist.
So it's cutting his wrists and then it's draining down through these little eyelets that are then going into the walls.
Yeah,
so
it forms like sigils on the out of the carvings on the temple and shit.
What movie ripped that off? You're seeing this look of Blade, but you can see in the sarcophagus, and you've got Blade. The way his face was shadowed, you could see his nose and the bridge of his eyes because the way the light was shining. It was just little stuff like that they did in this movie.
But some of the movie ripped that off, though, right? Was Resident Evil in one of the sequels? Didn't they rip off that whole thing with the blood trailing through?
I feel like blood are traveling.
Are you talking about where they look into the little screen and you can look in the container and the liquor's in there?
No.
I think he's talking about having blood run
through
the
whole blood thing.
I feel like that's been in a bunch of movies.
I think they did that in the last one that we've probably forgotten about. But yeah, somebody ripped that off. Because we've, I've talked extensively about stuff that Blade obviously borrowed from. But when we look at the production artwork for Blade with the body bags and such, when we look at the fashion sense, the music too, the techno music, which was not a thing
for martial arts, but techno existed, but
combining techno with the kind of action sequences, one wonders if the Matrix didn't borrow heavily from this movie. Maybe they didn't actually get to see the movie, but maybe they were aware of the production.
They kind of lend to each other. You got a fast beat.
I think some of this is just a it's like people. Oh, these cars are ripping off each other. They call these cars like the same. There's also like a design language.
Yeah.
That sort of will hit like
common,
all
four wheels, two doors, and a windshield. They all got them.
All these designers go to school with the same.
There's a zeitgeist. You've got people drawing from the same influences and coming to similar conclusions.
All the same people who are all the same age. They all go to this design school at the same time.
Well,
Let me finish. They all finish school at the same time. They all get jobs at the same time. So then all of their ideas that were all, you know, those, they all of a sudden will then leak into these movies. I think, or in the car industry, or it's, I think that's just how the sort of design works.
But they said the script had been around for a while. So, I mean, you got to figure.
Yeah, but I don't know if the script had been around for a while.
No, because again,
blood
they
trails.
Lost a year to try and, you know, Fincher thinking he was going to direct it.
But
at
it didn't
point,
say
so
the script insert techno music here. Haha, we're the first ones to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's just techno was getting big. It moved into movies.
What other music would have worked in those scenes, though?
Fucking, well, Armageddon came out at the same time. They could have put some fucking
Aerosmith.
Aerosmith.
I was
crying when you bled
me. Well, and
Whistler
was last in CCR, so it could have gone that route,
too.
They've drained Blade. He gets loose, or they release him. I think his mom's wanting to bang him or some shit like that.
She's rubbing her cheeks on his lips and stuff.
That's before they lock him up.
Well, at some point, he gets released, I think, by Nabushi Wright's character, Dr. Karen, whatever.
Good job there, Frank.
Yeah.
And she knows that she's going to die from the vampirism. Whistler keeps telling her, you know, we didn't catch you in time. You're slowly turning. Kind of got a zombie thing going on there where you've been bitten and you're going to turn and we're just waiting for it to happen.
But she cured
herself, though, because she came up with a cure. But she gives up her blood to Blade, which reinvigorates him, gives him the strength to kill his mama, and then both of them go after the various vampires using stealth moves that kill them quietly until Blade's ready to full on take on LaMagra. But unfortunately, by that point, Stephen Dorff has been possessed by this power.
He gets his arm chopped off,
but he's his blood being where his whole body is blood stuff. So he's able to like draw his arm back into himself and he can't be harmed. But before that happens, you wanted to comment on
that fucking scene where he's got this blood high. He's like, because he finally got human blood, and he runs through and he does that flip and he lands on the middle part, and then Quinn, the
Donald Logue's character,
the dude
who had stolen his sunglasses after he'd been captured,
because earlier he was like, hey man, thanks for shades. he's like, oh, I've been waiting to do this a long time, and he runs at him.
I got two hands now, I don't know which one to kill you with.
And you think they're gonna have this big battle, and he lunges at him and he just pulls out one of those fucking
the line that's in his
in this thing,
fish wire,
but it's metal, it's
so
a
he jumps at him and he just jumps at him, and then he just pulls out the freaking line and just severs his head. And as he cuts his head, you know, he turns into the freaking dust bones thing. And then they do this. The CGI looks so. But his glasses flip up in the air. And he catches him as he does like the fucking spin thing. And then the techno music kicks in. And it's just like perfect timing as he puts the sunglasses on. And I was like, dude, I'm telling you, I remember it like it was yesterday. The theater exploded when he put his sunglasses on and the techno music kicked in. It was, the fucking timing in this movie with this stuff, they did such a good job to have those yeah moments. And I remember the fucking theater was like, yeah, dude, when he cuts that dude's head, because you were totally not expecting it. You were expecting them to fight it out, like the big long kung fu battle like they'd had this whole movie. And they'd had that dude around this whole time. And dude, he just cuts his head off and the glasses flip and catches him. And it was just, it's movie magic.
You speak of those iconic moments, I think it's very much worth noting. Everybody, especially on the internet these days, they make fun of the hoop superhero pose where you land on one knee and then you raise up, and that's like the superhero thing. Did that happen before Blade? I don't think it did. The Matrix did it a bunch of. No, I think I really remember that being a big thing with Blade. In the trailers, you see him. Nah, I don't think so. No, I think this was a Blade thing.
Luke. No.
I mean, our listeners can come back on us with that, but especially tied into a superhero movie, in part because they couldn't fucking kneel in superhero movies before that, because they all had those awful latex costumes, the rubber suits with their rubber muscles, like fucking Batman, who's barely able to move in this goddamn thing.
Batman did it too. I think Superman is.
Batman did not fucking do
when did
that
Superman
shit.
Do
Superman
it?
Did definitely did not do
when
that
did Christopher
shit.
Reeves fly not, down and yeah. land on one knee?
No.
Did he?
One of them, I
I don't buy it.
I just get general shot, I want to say.
He did not land. No, bullshit. That did not happen in the fucking Donner Superman movies. I call total bullshit on that. That is such an iconic pose now. It's sort of like Mac pointing out how all the superheroines do the flip thing where they get their thighs around somebody's head and then flip them over. And that started with Mystique and X-Men. But I'm telling you, man, I'm pretty confident of this.
I'm going to call you out on it. I feel
like it's such a superhero trope thing. I feel like I've seen it before. I feel like I've seen it before this. I can't think of one. Yeah.
But it's not Spider-Man because Spider-Man hadn't come out yet. Yeah. It's not any of the X-Men movies because none of them had come out yet. Yeah. You know, Iron Man was one of the ones that really helped to popularize it. But before that, The Matrix, because the same thing happens with Neo. But I think that they got it from Blade. But another thing that's very important with this movie is with Christopher Reeve, while he was very graceful flyer and he did okay fight scenes, he was not a martial artist. He was decently well-built, but he wasn't like really muscular and shit. You get Michael Keaton for the Batman movies and the success of Batman movies, they're all in the rubber suits because they don't actually have muscles and they're very stiff and shit. I love that this is the first movie where you get a guy who's actually physically has a great physique, a person who's a martial artist who can actually do the moves, but also a really great actor. Wesley Snipes is an awesome actor. They didn't put him in rubber suits, even though they did test that. There was apparently hot as hell and Wesley Snipes didn't want anything to do with it, but they did try. They did test some leather suits on him. I mean, plastic suits on him. But he could actually move like a superhero. He could actually do superhero style action. And because of the way the kills work, he actually had like superpower effects and shit. And he could do the leaps, which we've seen in a bunch of movies, not the least of which being The Matrix. He really was a pioneer in those respects. He could do the physical work. He didn't need all these stuntmen. He didn't need all this bullshit camera trickery. You could just let Wesley Snipes do his fucking kicks, do his fucking punches, and he could pull it off. Plus, he could act his ass off.
Yeah, I think those fight scenes were on par with the Jackie Chan, you know, Rumble in the Bronx, just crazy kung fu. They were great. And like you said, there's no CGI involved.
And Snipes' presence cannot be diminished. I mean, this guy, he's so fucking cocky. He's got so much fucking swagger. You know that Snipes himself has that fucking swagger. He's not having to fake it. He is that fucking cocky. He is a badass and he knows it. And he brings that to the screen. The script of this movie is kind of, it's not so great. But the conviction of Goyer to do a hard R badass movie, at one point because the budget had gotten so high, New Line was like, can we get a white guy to play Blade?
Are you serious?
And he's like, no fucking way can you do that. It has to be, you can't cast a white guy's Blade. Goyer fighting for the integrity of this movie, Wesley Snipes bringing his considerable charms and prowess, and Stephen Norrington having such a unique vision. Those three people just really made this movie the success that it was, and they all had crazy conviction. They're all kind of nutty, but especially Snipes in later years, and Norrington too. Norrington's super eccentric. He refused to do press on any of his movies. That's one of the reasons why he hasn't made a movie since, is because he's completely uncompromising. He does not give a shit about being a Hollywood success. He's not going to make a movie until they make a movie the way he wants to do it. But one of the guys was saying that apparently he's working on like a stop motion movie in his garage he's been doing for like years and years. And that's going to come out eventually.
It's funny you say that, because when he clicked on the movie to see the reviews, to see the tomatometer, and then the people, like, it would show like David S. Goyer's face. But him, it didn't show his face. It was just a profile.
Because it may not be images. Yeah.
Because his face isn't even out there to put on the thing. It was really weird. Yeah. LaMagra. He beats LaMagra.
Well, we kind of figured that out.
He kicks the needles that make the things into the things.
Yeah, we don't have to. I do think that it was cool because by using LaMagra, they made Steven Dorff somebody who could actually fight Blade and it not be completely ridiculous, which is a problem we have with a lot of superhero movies where you've got some old dude who really can't fight, can't even fake fighting. And then when the hero shows up, you're like, okay, what are we supposed to do with this guy now? So I like that they figured out a way of making Dorff somebody who could actually wrestle with Snipes for at least a little bit. And he had a pretty decent physique too, you know, two different looking guys, obviously. But yeah, they have kind of a bullshit resolution where they use the serum to stop Deacon Frost. And then, of course, in the original filmed ending, you've got Morbius teased for a sequel.
Yeah.
They had to cut that because they never get to get the rights. And instead, he turns up in Russia. And I love that they show Blade's intellect by having him speaking perfect Russian to the vampire he's going to kill in Moscow. Solid ending. Good flick. Definitely enjoy it. Just another few quick bits. The original actor in mind to play Whistler was Mark Singer. That would have been interesting.
Mark Singer?
Yeah, that would have been cool, huh?
That would have been different.
Stan Lee did film a cameo for this movie. He was one of the cops that came in at the end of the rave scene, but he got cut. cut.
What?
Apparently, tons of extras quit very early on into the race sequence because it was a disgusting, hot, sticky mess. And one guy actually tried to sue the production for acquiring a skin disease from it, but he tried to claim that he got a skin disease from the corn syrup.
Well, didn't use real blood.
Yeah, that didn't work out. But speaking of lawsuits, Marv Wolfman, who of course created Blade for the Marvel Comics, he was one of several creators who in the 1970s took advantage of Marvel's slipshod accounting practices and never signed a work-for-hire contract to sign away the rights to his character. So he tried to sue Marvel to get his character back, or at least to get a cut of the movie. I think he was suing for like $35 million.
Lord.
What's interesting to me...
It's the whole damn budget of the film.
But what's interesting to me is that he never went to a jury trial. It was a judge trial who ruled against him. I always assumed that the course of action was that they proved that Marv Wolfman was aware of the practices of his industry and regardless of having actually signed the contract, knew that by having his character published that it would be a Marvel Comics property, and that's how they managed to take away his rights. According to the judge, though, what it was is that Marvel had significantly changed the character enough through successive appearances and through the movies that he was no longer the Blade that Wolfman had created, and therefore he did not have a claim to the Blade that appeared in the movie.
Well, didn't like the original Blade like wear like yellow glasses or something?
And he looked different.
He had like wood stakes and he had like a leather jacket.
Sure. Yeah, but that's a bullshit fucking ruling. I still think that he would lose based on the standards of the industry because he knew once he was published in a Marvel comic and the Marvel comic had a copyright. The Marvel comics had copyright information on them. It said copyright Marvel Comics. You don't wait from 1973 when the character was created to 1998 on the eve of the release of the movie to launch your lawsuit. Yeah. If you wanted to reclaim the character, you should have done it years earlier.
Yeah. Well, so they knew he was doing it for them. You think he was just trying to get paid?
Of course he was trying to get paid. But you have statute of limitations. You had a guy who thought he was smarter than he was in terms of legal stuff. But I just, when hearing the actual judge ruling that it was just like, no, Marvel significantly changed the characters, like... that's some bullshit too. So there's a lot of bullshit on both sides, I think. But yeah, Marv Wolfman ended up winning that, and Wolfman had some punitive shit leveled against him by Marvel. A number of creators tried to take advantage of that loophole. Gary Friedrich, who created Ghost Rider, also tried to pull the same shit, and they fucking punished his ass. For a while there, he couldn't even sell prints of Ghost Rider at conventions without Marvel threatening to sue him. So they came hard on these guys when they tried to, and I see their side of it, but they needed way better lawyers to try to sell that shit, and they just waited too fucking long to try to pull that shit, so it wasn't going to work regardless. I just have to point out that, again, this movie predates X-Men. All the shit where let's put our heroes in leather and let's make sure they're able to move and fight and let's make them as cool as possible and as grounded as possible came from Blade, and Blade just does not get the credit that it deserves for really showing Marvel how to do movies going into the 20th century. Obviously, we've moved past the X-Men movies as well, and we prefer the Marvel Cinematic Universe to Singer's X-Men, Fox's X-Men, but at the time X-Men came out, they were like the high watermark for superheroes, but they wouldn't have necessarily gotten there without Blade to show the way, and I think the movie definitely deserves credit for that and acknowledgement for that.
Absolutely.
I'll give you that.
It's unusual to have a black woman be the romantic lead in one of these movies, but not just that, I wasn't aware of this, but apparently, I think her name is Alexandra Shipp. She's the actress who plays Storm in the most recent X-Men movies, and before her, of course, you have
Halle Berry,
both very light-skinned black women, mixed race too. I wasn't aware of this. There's a major pushback against the casting of Storm because a lot of people of color believe that Storm should have been darker, and they're opposed to these lighter-skinned women playing Storm. They're opposed to there's a sense that very few women are on the darker scale. Even when you have African American actresses getting cast, that very few of them are on the darker end of the scale. And the fact that you have an African woman being played by lighter-skinned actresses is a real problem for them. I have some issues with that because I think once the actress has already been cast and she's already appearing in movies, you're attacking her more than you're attacking the studios and the casting processes.
It's not her fault she auditioned for a movie and got hired.
The part, right. You know, but they shit on her because she took the part, and it's like, oh, you're supposed to just excuse yourself. You're a working actress and you're just going to excuse yourself. But I understand where they come from in that. The point I'm making is that I think it's cool that they made a point of casting not only a black romantic lead in this movie, not the co-lead basically in this movie, but the fact that she is fairly dark. You know, she's not as dark as most of the actors that show up in Black Panther because we've made some progress in these 20 years, but she was very dark for that time and she's still very dark for our time. She's certainly darker than any of the actors who've played Storm, for instance. And so the movie, I think, deserves credit for that as well. I think it's very daring that they went that route and commendable. And the last thing is that Stephen Dorff was hard selling steering Norrington, and I love that he shays the shit out of DC movies, because they're like, you look at the amateur hour DC movies and how much they'd be improved by somebody like Stephen Norrington doing that. And I couldn't help but think that you may very well be in the same room with David Goyer as you're saying this, and David Goyer went on to write most of the DCEU movies, or co-write most of those movies, on the strength of Blade. He kind of owes his career to Blade. So it was just funny to me that Storff would almost go out of his way to shit on David Goyer's filmography. But a lot of this information that I relayed is from a Entertainment Weekly article, Blade Oral History, Wesley Snipes and the Cast Look Back at a Modern Cult Classic, written by Lee Greenblatt. Very cool oral history. I recommend getting online and checking that out. Anything else?
So maybe I missed the part. You're saying Stephen Dorff shit on David S. Goyer?
No, Stephen Dorff shitted on the DC movies, specifically the modern DC movies, shitting on, I think, Zack Snyder. And, you know, David Goyer not only wrote all the Christopher Nolan movies, but he wrote two of the Zack Snyder Superman movies. So, indirect shade. Maybe he created a shitstorm, LaMagra, that splattered on David Goyer.
He's probably super fucking bitter because all he's doing is vape commercials. And that was 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, apparently also he felt like he was kind of a sellout by doing Blade. He was trying to do more quieter, independent type movies. Based on what I've read, he didn't really want that kind of spotlight anyway. But most of the people involved with Blade are proud of Blade. And a lot of the guys, specifically Donald Logue, Stephen Dorff, and Wesley Snipes are all still good friends, you know, 20 years later.
Really?
Indeed.
What's Stephen Dorff doing nowadays?
Fuck do I know. So we got Facebook likes from Ali Bats, Keith G. Baker, Derek William Crabb, Clinton Robinson, Michael Allen Carlisle, and Richard Field. Mac posted on the Facebook page about how they're apparently casting for some Blade-related movie here in Houston and soliciting pretty much anybody who wants to come down to be a part of this movie. Keith G. Baker suggested, oh, please, God, do go. I would love to see y'all in this shit. And the problem is, like vampires, we do not photograph. So, not gonna happen. Permanent Marvel Maximus followers include Anthony Joseph Marciano, who loves alternative comics, Armand Rosamilia, Adam, DC Marvel Cinema, Dragon Extreme, Freebird, Whistler probably would have liked that one, Hall of Comics Podcast, Herlinda, Hoppy Pods, It's Just Rage, John Merrow, Lisa Lissiz, Mark Golston MD, Marvin Wynn, Mike Carberry, The Nerd Grounds Jake, Paul Kinzel, Phelpsy, Podcast Partners, Ron Saunders, Scream Queen, spelled with a K and a W, Slangward Scott, This Week in Film, Tori Shaw, Trailer Junkies Podcast, Tyler Hewitt, What If Podcast, The Wicked Righteous Comic from Alternate Comics, Your Man on Matt Kine, and Zod the Dragon. Retweet frantic ones include Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Cosplay Group, Dr. Ange, Professor Frenzy, Randomitable, Siskoid, and Talk Nerdy to Me. Keepers of the Favorite's Flame include 108 Sage, Adam Blackmoon, Anime Freaks, Anime Nostalgia, Anthony Joseph Marciano, who again loves Alternate Comics, and probably the Underguides podcast, opposed to this one, but, you know, we throw them into our group. Annie Torres, Backseat Drivers, Vico Django, Black Reaper Konecki, trademark, Bob Buster, Bronze Age Babies, Bumwine Bobcat, Canoes, Chris at Bad Books for Beginners, Chronosphere Fiction, Crazy Town Podcast, Daniel Blake, Daniel French, Fritch Phonius Sound Design, Doc Strange, Ed Moore at Teal Productions, L. Cruz Gonzalez, G. A. Sanchez, Gabriel Blake, The Hammer Strikes, The Hoopers, Ice in the Face, IG88, Jennifer DeRoss, Jerry Whitworth, John Horsley, Kaiser Leo, The List Game, Longbox Crusade, Lost in Time, Marvel Mythos Podcast, Matt Stacy, Max Romero, The Nerd Rage Podcast, Nerdfix Strangers, Nicole, Peter Wynn, Randy Andrews, Red Time for Bonzo, a Marxist Reaganist film podcast, Richard G., Sean Merrick, Slangword Resist, Steve Sellers, Tara Rose, Terry Mayo, Varangian Vigilante, Vero on Varkas, Words and Pictures, Yoart, and Zena Schultz. Now for the Quite Enough Sayers, Stu Perrin said thanks for the Ant-Man episode, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I should say. Twisted Owl Productions said thank you much. Richard G. wrote, give this one a try. Yours is interesting, though. I like how you use the issues title method creative, and directed us to a blog carrying the I believe a fictional podcast or fictional adventures in a podcast, Strange Corpse Potsy. I literally put this together tonight right before the episode was going to come out, so I didn't have a chance to check it out. He also adds, I really enjoyed the story on Rob Liefeld, tons of stuff I did not know in that piece, so I'm assuming he's referencing maybe a Spawnometer. It all kind of gets bundled together in the Rolled Spine podcast. Delvin, aka Dark Web Felix Slider of Long Box Crusade, wrote, something tells me you guys fans may not have liked Ant-Man 2, Large and in Charge. Perhaps a dark web intuition. Canoes wrote, I need to watch this movie before listening to this episode. I hope we aren't in Thor the Dark World territory with this one. Randy Caldwell wrote, I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp much better than The Incredible Hulk. My biggest problem with the movie is one I had with the original Ant-Man. How did Hank Pym riding an ant catch up to a speeding missile? Was the ant modified? Sadly, these are the things that took me out of the movie. Everything else was just meh thing to me. I just passively watched since I have MoviePass. Bob Buster wrote, good review, concise, though well done. You guys made some good points. Thinking about it now, they could have used more story elements for the movie. And yes, with the Wasp, did feel like they were pushing something, though I can't put my finger on it. Still liked the movie, though. Finally, Richard Field wrote, I didn't think the movie was that bad, but I can tell you this, I did not like what they did with Janet Van Dyne. I also was hoping for more special effects with Ant-Man and the Wasp. Seems like the trailer spoiled too much of what happened in the movie for me, but I still liked it. Was it better than Black Panther? No. That distinction goes to Thor number 3. This is my movie along with the latest Avengers. And finally, the Merry Marvel Marching Society, 20th Century Geek, Amy Stewart Hale, the antimatter version of Bill, Alon Rising, Bat Nick, Bone Dragon Comics, Brody's Kitchen, CJ Fox, Caroline Wells, Coffee and Comics Blog, and Podcast, Collected Edition Podcast, Delvin at Dark Web, a.k.a. Felix Leiter, Dirk Ashton, Fair City Podcast, Fandom Fights the Fuhrer's Flunkies, Fanholes Podcast, Gal Walks into a Comic Shop Podcast, Gregory Litchfield, History of Comics on Film, Jason Handelman, Jeffrey Brown, Joe Crawford, Just in Time with the J&T Baggers, Justice First Dawn, Keith G. Baker, Long Box of Darkness, Man Brain Podcast, Nerds Chatting, Movies, TV, Comics, Nexus of All, Paul Matthew Carr, Podcast Partners, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Stu Perrins, Tim Price the Notcaster, Tony Scipione, Twistyle Productions, and Zach Sally.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. Views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
Holy shit.
My womb.
I'm going to throw up. That was so offensive.
I have to get that done.
I'll be back again and again and again. Yeah.